Good morning, and welcome to the City of Palm Coast City Council Workshop. Pursuant to the Governor's Executive Order suspending all statutes that require a quorum to be present in person at local government public meetings or require a local government body to meet at a specific public place, the City may conduct meetings of its City Council without having a quorum of its members present physically or at any specific location, and utilizing communications media technology, such as telephonic or video conferencing, as provided by Florida statutes. As mayor, pursuant to the authority granted to me by the city charter, I declared a public emergency on March 15, 2020, in response to COVID-19. Furthermore, pursuant to those powers and the governor's executive order, I suspended all city requirements that require a physical quorum to be present to conduct this meeting and authorize that this meeting be conducted by communications media technology under the city's state of emergency proclamation for virtual meetings executed on April 3rd, 2020. The city manager, pursuant to the authority granted to him by the city's initial state of emergency for COVID-19, has closed City Hall to the public. Therefore, no member of the public will be allowed into the community wing of City Hall during this meeting. Notice that this meeting was being held by communication media technology and not at a physical location was posted on the city's website at least 5 days ago. The notice provided that those members of the public needing reasonable accommodation to participate in the meeting could contact the city clerk for assistance by noon on Monday, August 10, 2020. Access to this meeting is being provided via live stream on the city's website at www.palmcoastgov.com and by calling 386-223-1690. Should you need technical assistance, please call 386-986-2391. Today is August 11, 2020. It is 9 a.m. Please rise and join me in the Pledge Allegiance to the flag.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Holmes?
Yes, here.
Vice Mayor Klupas?
Present.
Councilmember Branzino?
Here.
Councilmember Puff?
Here.
Councilmember Nitz?
Here.
Mayor, all members are present.
Okay, we'll now move to public participation. Any member of the public wish to make public comment, please call in at 386-223-1690. Hit star 9 to unmute yourself. Okay, thank you. We'll close public comment. We'll move to agenda item number 1, which is presentation of the FY 2021 proposed budget for internal services, capital, special revenue, and all other remaining funds.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Good morning. getting to the end of the budget presentations to wrap up. Today we have Helena here to give the presentations. I believe Gwen is also with her to go through those and answer questions Council may have.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning, Mayor, City Council.
Good morning.
As Mr. Morton stated, we're here today to talk about our internal service funds. Carl is going to present the capital funds, and then we'll move on to special revenues and all of our remaining appropriated funds. At this point, Gwen Ragsdale, our budget manager, will go over our timeline and any personnel changes for these funds. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. Here is our budget presentation timeline. We've been over this several times in the past. Just wanted to highlight a few things on this tab. We came to you in May with our year-to-date budget results, our fund accounting presentation, and the 10-year CIP plan and revenue restrictions. And in June, we did the property tax presentation and your adoption of City Council priorities. In July through September, we've adopted the maximum millage rate. We've had budget workshops presented to City Council. We had the general fund revenue, the proprietary funds, and today we're going to do the CIP and all other funds. On August 25th, we will come back to you with the final proposed budget for all funds. And September 10th, the public hearing to adopt the tentative budget. And the final millage rate and budget will be presented on September 23rd. So our overview for today, we will talk about personnel, the internal services fund, capital funds, and all remaining funds. So for our personnel changes, we have fleet maintenance has asked for a transfer of their inventory specialist from Public Works Streets. Facility maintenance has asked for a transfer of their public works supervisors of facilities from the public works streets. And the IT internal services is asking for a new IT programmer. Again, just a reminder that this budget does not include any merit raises or adjustments for cost of living for the fiscal year 21. Next, Carl Cody will present to you the capital funds.
Yes, good morning. I'd like to begin here with our capital projects fund. This is our revenue slide. And this fund here is the portion of the sales tax dollars that's collected locally that comes to the city for use on capital project, either new or maintenance of our existing facilities. So that's the bulk of the dollars coming in here. You will see over the next 5 years, we have a few transfers. We have some coming back for Holland Park for some of the new capacity items added to Holland Park. That is coming from our Recreation Impact Fee Fund, as well as the Community Center. So there's some dollars coming back into this fund for those. We also have some transfers in from Public Works, from the Utility, Fleet, Stormwater, and Building Fund. This is for the new fleet facility at Public Works. So that's in the next couple of years, moving forward for that construction of that first phase. And then we have the settlement received from the surety for the Holland Park for the additional work that was presented to you at the last meeting. And then we have some grants. The current grant this year is for the generator at City Hall, and there's a grant that the Little League is pursuing to add some additional dugouts on the new fields that are under in construction now at the sports complex. So this here is a summary. In the next several years, upcoming years, the focus really is moving forward the first phase of Public Works, and then also to address our major, or I'd say major, more eminent or critical items with our facilities, such as re-roofing. And I'll go through each of these, you know, fairly briefly. Our path rehab and renewal, we show something in the fifth year to repave, resurface some of our existing network of paths and trails. We have some additional trails, head signage out again, you know, in that end of the five-year cycle. Holland Park Phase 2 will roll into the upcoming fiscal year to finish it out. The goal is to be done by the end of this calendar year, be complete with all the work. Our park rehab and renewals, this is to address our existing facilities. This is to resurface courts, upgrade some of the facilities, address, you know, worn out items in our playgrounds, things like that. They do in future years include, you know, resodding fields or reconstructing some of the courts that can't be resurfaced or at a point where we need to do some reconstruction or improvements, some ADA work at some of our facilities. So that's really a lump sum of all our park facilities. So that's a major item in this fund. But over the next few years, we're really focusing on just the critical needs, things that can't be put off that we have to address immediately. The information technology and capital upgrades, we have a lot of infrastructure replacement that is planned for this coming year. This also includes the security going in at Holland Park as well. We show in future years some additional work for items with our infrastructure, replacing outdated equipment throughout the city, potential for either, you know, relocating or upgrading of our server room or looking at alternatives with some of our, you know, a potential option for private provider or other alternatives. The community center, there's some work here to finalize some items at the community center. We put in a generator this year. We need to landscape around it. There's some additional items associated with obtaining our LEED certification with the facility, just to close that out. Our city hall item is really the generator that went in place. It is fully activated, operational. It's up and running. We're should be closing that out, getting reimbursement through the state. We're working through that process now. Our fire stations here in the next year, we have some items to re-roof a couple of our facilities, to improve the kitchen, to paint one of the buildings, so those types of items. A public works facility is underway in design. Our goal is to come back to you and give you an update in September, kind of give you a status as to where we are as we move forward through the design phase. The goal is to next spring assess where we are with our revenues, with the phasing of the project, and determine when the construction of that first phase would begin. The Wetland Mitigation Bank, this is for property that the city acquired at the north end of the city, east of 95, north of Matanzas. Those wetland impacts, the city still needs to go in there and do some of that restoration of those lands. So that's gonna be an ongoing project, continue into future years as well. Energy improvements. This here is our initiative to do a strategic energy action plan. Also includes looking at solar ROI on our facility. So it's a comprehensive approach as to really a citywide initiative, strategically looking at those items. Our facilities ADA transition plan, we had an assessment done years ago. We've plugged away addressing some of those items. A lot have to do when we rehab a park or a building. We're completing some of those. Some of these we do independently. So that's, again, an ongoing program that we do to address any deficiencies that we may have at our facilities. And then we have just a contingency, small dollars in here to deal with any upcoming items that may arise. And the transfers to other funds, those are from up above. So most of those items are for to offset the recreation impact fee projects, because new capacity for park improvement projects only pay for a portion. The other portion has to come from city funding, and this is the fund that has generally been used in the past to make up that difference. So these are associated with those projects. A lot of these are grant funded projects as well to offset the cost. So when we go through the park impact fee, we can touch upon some of those. Any questions on any of those projects or this fund in particular? The Streets Improvement Fund, this is funds received from primarily the state for fuel tax and state revenue sharing. You can see our current projection for this year and next year is reduced from what it normally is. You can see back in 22, we're looking for it to be back to normal. We do have some grants in here. That grant is for beautification at the interchange of 195. This is one that I think the city was awarded a couple years ago, but they delayed it because they were resurfacing the highway, adding the lights out the on-ramps. They wanted to complete their work before we did ours, so they have it in this current budget right now to move forward with. Moving down to projects, Florida Park Drive improvements. In the upcoming budget, we have dollars to do some of the treatments at the two canal ends, doing some landscape and enhancements to the roadway there, as well as our grant program to fund some dollars in that first year. And then you can see in additional years, there would be grant dollars to continue that program. intersection turn lane analysis. This is really to, as we move forward, when we resurface our roads, we're fixing some of our intersections. This is to look at typically our signalized intersections where we may need to do some enhancements either to address an ADA issue, replace some outdated pedestrian crossing equipment, maybe add some lighting, redo some striping, just make, to make the intersection safer and consistent and replace any outdated items. So this is, again, an ongoing program. We usually analyze one year, design any enhancements, and then the next year we would go ahead and make those improvements. I guess the most recent one would be adjacent to the community center. We added a crossing across Clubhouse Drive to get the community center to the fire station. That is wrapping up soon. We're waiting for FPL to remove a light pole that is in the way to for the pedestrian curb cut for to make it ADA accessible. So that as soon as that's complete, we'll be able to wrap up that project. Citation Boulevards is a project that we moved to the Transportation Impact Fee Fund, but it started off in this fund, so you do see it listed here. Sidewalks and bike paths, again, the focus is in future years. We still have our sidewalk master plan. There are still some segments on that plan to complete. We have those out in future years to move forward with some of those. Parkway beautification, that's the interchange enhancement at I-95 and 100. Continuous streetlight program is underway. Right now, you've probably seen the poles start to go up on Belterra up at the north end by the library down to Pine Lakes. The other poles from Pine Lakes to Whiteview should be delivered and offloaded here in the city. So they'll be ready to move into that next phase of installation. So that's going to continue down to 100, and we have some upcoming projects for next year for Ravenwood and Seminole Woods for construction for those installation of those two segments. So again, that's an ongoing program with our streetlight program following our master plan, trying to continue stay ahead of design so FPL can work it into their program. Our bridge rehab and renewal has to do with our existing bridges. These are inspected by DOT typically in a two-year cycle. There are some that are 1 year and some on a six-month, depending on the condition of the bridge. And through those reports that are very lengthy, they identify items that we should be addressed or just maintenance concerns, or they're just notations. So we try and stay on top of these, and we do plug dollars in here to address any items to keep them in shape so we don't run into issues where it becomes a major rehab project. Our traffic signals, this is really our a lot to do with our optimization program. We have some dollars plugged in here to continue that initiative. In our street rehab and renewal, we have on our program for the coming year to continue with our recommended approach to maintain our PCI average that's in place for our two different road types, our arterials and collectors, and then our residential roads. In the coming year, we have a residential contract that was just awarded, and then we have planned to do some additional arterial roads as well.
Carl, may I ask a question real quick?
Yes.
First, good morning. Second, the bridge rehab and renewal, I remember that we had a presentation and you gave a great matrix of the different bridges with the different, I don't want to call it a health grade, but essentially it was like an A through F rating, right? And I was just curious, do we have anything that is in the lower vectors of the rating system that we haven't taken care of? My memory is kind of eluding me here, but I remember this ancillary.
We have one critical one, and it's actually another item on the agenda today. It's associated with the Citation Boulevard road project, and that one is actually going to replace that bridge. They're actually pipes, but based on the sizing and spacing of the pipes, they're classified as a bridge. That's on a six-month rotation just due to the poor condition, and that we're actually moving forward with a contract today for approval to replace that. So that was our worst one. All of our other ones are in decent condition. There's a couple that may be load restricted, based on the amount of traffic and the load, but the condition of our other bridges are all in good shape now. We did have a program for quite a few years where we designed and then did a major rehab the following year. We did that for several years on numerous bridges, and we've gotten past that stage. So all our more critical bridges have been taken care of, except for the Titation one, which we're looking forward to can do that now.
Great to hear. Thank you very much.
In our rehab and renewal program, you know, I show the fund balance carryover at the bottom, but at the very bottom of the slide, you'll see the funding need for the pavement program to continue to maintain our roadways at their existing condition level. We would need additional funding to supplement that resurfacing program, and those dollars are identified each year as to what the need is. And this is one of our priority items for upcoming fiscal year, to look at this and how we can supplement the revenue for that program. So I just wanted to note it here that those are the dollars we are looking at in terms of funding need for this revenue fund.
Councilman Cuff.
Yes, Carl. Again, good morning. On that item for street rehab, we've budgeted for this year and 2021 close to $10 million. My first question is to you or to Mr. Morton, how sure are we that we're going to have that $6.4 million for 2021? I mean, is there anything that would be affected by the pandemic and funding at the state level and so forth that would inhibit our ability to have that money to spend on this item in 2021 that you're aware of?
Yes, that revenue, you know, Helena can speak to this too, is we projected based on what the best information we have from the state at this time, that's the revenue projection they're feeding us. That $6.4 million for next year is on two contracts. The first one's already been awarded. So the other project, our intent was to, you know, roughly halfway through the fiscal year, assess where we are with the revenue projections, see if we're on target to what the state's indicating, and if we are, then we'll go out to bid with that project. We can always scale it back because it's a unit price bid where we can pull back a mile or two on a road or eliminate a road. But that's the intent.
Okay. But starting in 2022, we're anticipating a $2.3 million hole in this.
Correct. Because what happened was in 2019, that project didn't happen until 2020. So that $10 million really covers 3 years of projects.
Okay. Thank you.
Transportation Impact Fee Fund, these are revenues that are collected as part of development. So you can see this is a fairly healthy fund. It only can be used on new capacity projects. A lot of these are also associated and supplemented with DOT grants and funding. So we do have an active project, Old Kings Road Widening and Extension. The first phase is under construction now. That is going to roll into next year. The bulk of the work will happen in the upcoming fiscal year. Seminole Woods Turn Lane, that's one that wrapped up, adding a turn lane, another DOT-funded grant project. Belterra Turn Lane, Umpqua's Parkway to Pine Lakes, this is an item that needs to be in here for that short segment as part of a state requirement. Our Belterra Safety Improvements is a DOT-funded project. This is on the TPO list of projects to be funded. The design is basically complete. We do have one project in the upcoming fiscal year at East Hampton in Belterre to add a turn lane and extend the left turn lane coming off of East Hampton. It's been an issue that needs to be addressed at that particular intersection. So that one we're moving forward without the DOT grant because it's actually most of the work is not happening on DOT. On Belterre, sorry. But the future items are all various projects along Belterre at various intersections between 100 and Pritchard. Citation Boulevard improvements, that is another item that I just spoke about that is on your agenda today to award a contract to move forward with those improvements. So I'll talk a lot more about that when I present that item. Cypress Point and Belterre Parkway. This is...
Carl, if you can go back for a second, just the Old King Road widening and extension. I know nothing's proposed in 2022. I thought we were going to have meetings with FDOT to ensure that it's put in their five-year plan to take advantage of phasing it out, making sure, you know, since we got all of the easements secured and everything else. So where is that in the process?
We do coordinate with them. This item is on their list. I think it's on their protected list of projects, which I think there's only five projects on that listing. So as the funding is available from DOT, those projects have to be funded before any other project can get funded. But right now it is not in their program shown to be funded. They go through that cycle, which they begin this fall, and we will have meetings and discussions with them to they'll be assessing their revenue shortfall and adjustments as well. But we work with them every year, beginning in the fall through the spring, to update construction estimates, talk about city priority of projects, alternative funding sources. We work with them closely to get this project funded, but it is on the protected list of projects. No other projects with that below those five can leapfrog this particular project. So it's just a matter of awaiting the funding.
What other Palm Coast projects are in their five-year, 10-year plan?
In this particular fund, I think the two Old King segments are the only two within that five-year plan. We did have funding for four-lane in Matanzas, which we moved those design dollars to the first phase of Old Kings Road. So we've reminded them that they also need to go back and add funding back to the design phase for that particular project. So that's an item that has been on our discussion list with them as well.
Well, I think we have, as a council, decided to please get the funding for the Old Kings widening first and not just
correct
put other projects in there just to put them in there.
Correct. Yeah, we just put that at the back burner, but our top priority project is Old Kings Road widening. That's the only one that's really on that list right now and are in that list for this particular type of funding for the city.
So when you go through that process, I know we compete with Volusia County dollars. Is that the only county in District 5 that we're competing with?
Well, this project has already been through that cycle of scoring and classification and getting on that list. So once it's in the protected list, there's no more competing. It's more of just waiting on funding.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilman Cuff.
Councilmember Cuff.
Yes, Carl. You may have answered this question with your discussion about the FDOT, but based on that process that they go through and this being a protected project, when would we expect to see phase two funding for Old Kings Road in our, in the city budget? I mean, is that something we might see plugged in for 2022 or 2023, or is it just impossible to say?
It's impossible to say. We ask that question all the time, yeah. And they won't commit to any type of date. They do the same five-year plan as us, but again, they add projects in as other projects, you know, and funding comes available. But they're going to see shortfalls just as much or more than we are, because a lot of their funding comes through the gas tax as well.
Okay. And phase one that I know is underway now, what's the projected completion for that for Old Kings Road?
It'll probably be about next summer sometime, probably close to a year from now. There's a lot of utility conflicts. You'll see a lot of utility companies out there now, ATT, FPL, TECO. A lot of those are going to be working side by side with the contractor. So it's a very slow going project just because there are so many utilities and such limited right of way. So it's going to be a slow going project, but it's about a year long project, and it just really kicked off because the utilities took a while to begin work.
Okay. Thanks.
So other projects, the citation, like I said, I'll speak a lot more detail about that when I present that item. Cypress Point, I indicated this one here is to add some turn lanes and to replace a strain pole with a mass arm. This is gonna, one, allow additional turning movements and allow additional signal heads to be added so we can have some concurrent turning movements occur at the same time. So that is really gonna function, that have that intersection function much better than it does today. Matanzas Wood and Bird of Paradise intersection. This is one we are looking to make those improvements. Waiting for the four laning is really far out. This is one that it has already been classified today as being a lower level intersection that should be addressed. So we're looking to make some improvements here that can be incorporated and rolled into the ultimate four laning of the roadway there. Whiteview safety improvements. It's pretty much just on the shelf. This is one that is with DOT. These are a different set of dollars than the Old Kings Road widening. These are coming out of their different funding pot. It's just on their list of projects that has been submitted to them. Traffic signals. In current year budget, we are wrapping up the one at Belterra Market Ave. That one should be going live here shortly. And we have some additional one in the future identified, no particular location yet, but we know as we continue to add vehicles at some point in time, we will need another signal. Sidewalk expansion. We have some projects in here, some dollars in here to cover those projects. And you'll see a transfer out to the Old Kings Road Special Assessment District. These are, when development occurs, they pay an impact fee. Those impact fees that are tied to that assessment district go back and get moved into that particular fund. And Elena, I think, is going to go over that fund later today as well.
Councilman Cuff.
Councilmember Cuff.
Yes, Carl. Sidewalk expansion. That's not a whole lot of money. Is that, what type of work is that aimed at? New sidewalks or repairs to, you know, upgrades to existing sidewalks?
Yeah, I'm double checking now. This one here, this is really for new capacity. Any maintenance or repair can't be paid out of this. This has to be for new yeah. extensions. I believe this one here is for town center. One of our initiatives we had in the past was to provide connections to all the schools. So this is going to connect up to Imagine School. So this is a sidewalk connection. Currently, there is not one there now without crossing the street, and there's really no mid-block crossing either. So this is really getting a connection to the school. That's what those dollars are for.
Yeah, it didn't seem like a whole lot of money to build any huge length of sidewalks.
Right. It's not a big segment here.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All right, next slide. Recreation Impact Fee Fund. This here is, again, fees collected from development. This is one that the impact fee was adjusted this year and a study was completed. We show that the fee, which was approved at the last council meeting, being slowly increased over a three-year period for the next 2 years, three increments. So we do have some grants in this fund too. There, you can see they're highlighted here in the color of the grants line item. We, in current year for expenditures, we completed an impact fee study. We have community center parking. We are currently in the upcoming budget to analyze what our options are, either for a partnership with adjacent property owners or expanding our existing parking or just looking at various alternatives. But there may be dollars in the future to initiate some of those. So we just plugged in a placeholder here. We don't know what that is yet. So it's just a placeholder. The Lehigh Trailhead is a DOT-funded project for design. We are currently working with DOT to fund the construction phase of this. There's no commitment yet. This is when they have given us a time frame for. They said for the type of funding for this project, they're looking at, you know, in 3 years to fund it. We've asked them to advance it, to use multiple funding sources, to use advanced construction funds. So we're working closely with them. We've had several discussions over the past month or two to look alternatives. They're still waiting on some of the revenue projections to come in, so they're still analyzing their options, and this is on their list as an item to help move forward and expedite. Grand Swamp Trail Phase 2 is to extend our Grand Swamp Trail from the trailhead south to Lehigh Trail. This is for design dollars in 22 and future dollars for the construction phase. Long Creek Nature Preserve, this is a grant we have to construct additional boardwalks and overlooks and pavilions at the park site. It's roughly a matching grant. There'll be some dollars in there to update the design and the master plan of what we want to do with that overall build on that site and still meet our requirements that were tied to the land purchase grant dollars that the city received. We should be getting that grant soon. We've been notified back in January that we got the grant. Haven't issued the grants yet. COVID has slowed things down for them as well. So Waterfront Park Phase 1 and 2, this is our water access that we're looking to expand. This was part of our phased fine grant application process that we're currently going through. This will be done in multiple phases. Community Park Town Center, we have some dollars in here to update the master plan. There is a master plan that was done when the park was built, and there are multiple phases. Not all the phases have been built out, and we are trying to connect this with our art and public places and with City Hall actually being built. We really just need to update the master plan and tie in what future improvements we would be doing here in the park and all that plays out as an overall concept. Indian Trail Sports Complex parking expansion. We have this out in a future year. This is to add parking at that facility. We have a plan already drawn up as part of our design that we did to convert the two big multi-use fields to the four baseball fields. We laid out a parking arrangement and actually went through the Water Management District permitting at the same time. So this one's ready to move forward when there's funds available to complete this project. The Recreation Center, the regional tennis pickleball facility. This year we show some dollars for this partnership project to move forward. And then we have some transfers out. This is to send dollars back to the Capital Projects Fund for new capacity elements on those projects, those portion of the project. So it's not the whole cost, it's just the new capacity items associated with Community Center in Holland Park.
Councilman Cuff.
Councilmember Cuff.
Yeah, Carl, back under the, up under the revenue section of this slide, you know, the grant line, what are we, 2024, that is a chunk of change. I mean, is that something we want? Is that something that's committed? That seems kind of a long way out for.
That would be for the Grand Swamp Trail. In 22, we would have the design. And then once design's funded, typically DOT will fund construction within their five-year plan. It may not happen that quickly. Usually within 5 years of design, they try and fund construction. That's their target that we've been told.
Yeah. And that's essentially a multi-use path from the existing trailhead down to where downtown Center Boulevard comes out onto Old Kings Road.
Yeah, we'll be actually behind Hidden Lakes. We have easements behind Toscana and Hidden Lakes and behind the spray fields on the east side of all those developments. kind of in the along the edge of the swamp, okay, will be a multi-use path.
Okay. Thanks.
Fire Impact Fee Fund. This is the fund impact fee study was updated and increased this year. So you can see those dollars in the upcoming years as increasing. We do show in our fifth year, you know, depending on how quickly these fees come in will determine how quickly we can move forward with our next projects. So this projects will be strictly dependent on the revenue. The SR 100 CRA fund, in this particular fund regarding capital items, we have our roundabout safety improvement project. It's underway now for the design to look at the two roundabouts. And then we have dollars in future years to make any necessary improvements. That's just a placeholder until we finalize our design and identify what changes we will make. It will really set the dollars needed for that particular project. We have a few transfers out to the Recreation Impact Fee Fund. So work done at the trailhead, the tennis and pickleball facility, or Central Park. Those are all within the CRA, so we have these dollars going back to the Recreation Impact Fee Fund to pay for all over that portion of the project.
Carl, next we're going to be talking about our internal services, and we have Director Matt Mansell, who's going to present to you the Fleet and Facilities Fund.
Good morning, Honorable Mayor, members of the Council. This morning I will be presenting the Fleet and Facility Funds for your consideration for FY21. So you can see in front of you, this year for Fleet, we are projecting about a 10.9% decrease in overall budget from FY20 to 21. We do have some specific increases in certain line items, but overall we are proposing a less robust replacement plan this year versus FY20. So as we go through the internal allocations here, you can see last year we did have a fairly large new and replacement vehicle purchase program. So some of our allocations will increase for the future year replacement and current and future year repair and maintenance costs of those vehicles that we added last year. As we move down to the disposition of assets, this year we had projected about $200,000 in auction proceed returns, and we realized just about double that estimation. Current market conditions really increased residual values for the vehicles that we were putting up for auction, so that definitely assisted us with returning those revenues to the fleet fund. And then this year, since we don't have quite as many vehicles projected for replacement, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, you'll see that we are projecting, again, a lower amount for auction proceeds at about $150,000. You know, just trying to be a little bit conservative, realizing that current market conditions may not depict future market conditions for used vehicles for FY20. And then insurance settlements, sticking with our average estimation of around $20,000. This year we did see a little bit higher just because of a few smaller accident claims that really added up and brought us a little higher than our $20,000 estimation. And then our appropriations for replacements. Going down into expenditures, so we do have an increase in operating expenditures of about $100,000. Most of that can be explained by the transfer of our new parts inventory position that we are taking from the streets division and putting where it's more appropriately located, dealing with our assets and inventory into the fleet fund. That's really paid dividends in how we manage and procure items for our programs. And they do expend most of their time and energy in support of fleet operations. So moving that to that division is appropriate. And then capital expenditures, you'll see when we get to the next slide, we'll discuss not quite as aggressive as last year's purchase program, not as many new vehicles, sticking to replacing vehicles that are needed to be replaced at this time. Going down, you'll see the replacement ladder truck was approved during this year, FY20 replacement. That vehicle is still in build out, so we're carrying that money over from this year's fund into next year's budget. And fuel for resale projecting about $709,000 based on current market conditions.
Matthew, can you go back to the previous slides, please? Explain a little more about the fuel for resale. What is that exactly?
I'm going to have to phone a friend on this one, I think. Helena, if you could assist me with this. I know we budget for fuel that we are reselling to other departments. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. Good morning. That is our allocation of the fuel. A small portion of this does get billed to the county for EMS, but the majority of the fuel is purchased by the fleet fund and then monthly, based on usage, is allocated to each division. So as you see department budgets, you see the true cost of running the department, including the fuel.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so on the left, you'll see the new equipment that we are proposing purchasing for this year, broken down by department at a cost of $741,954. For replacements, we have about $3.7 million in replacements that we are proposing this year. The numbers for those were, we had 239 vehicles that were up for consideration to be replaced during this year, either by time, mileage, or they were carryovers from previous planned replacements that we had kept in the inventory, due to good condition. Of those 239 that were on the list, we are proposing right now 72 vehicles to be replaced. The rest of them will be retained in the fleet and kept for future consideration of replacement.
I have a question, if I may.
Yes.
Your fire truck, if Chief Beadle were still around, he'd probably attack me for this. Are those stock trucks or are those custom built? You said it was still in construction, so I'm assuming it's a custom vehicle.
So we start with a piggyback contract with a base vehicle, and then we do customize fit the truck for our purposes. So there is some customization on a standard chassis build.
But it is a standard chassis?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
All right, moving into the facilities fund. This one does show a increase. A lot of that can be attributed to the fact that we are reallocating funds that were identified in other departments for facility maintenance of their particular items and putting it into the facilities fund where that work is actually being maintained or managed. So take for instance, in this year's coming budget from the fire department, we had several line items that were previously allocated in their budget at an amount of $102,000 that now lives in the facilities maintenance fund. We also have the transfer of the public works supervisor position from streets into facilities so that they will have a supervisor position overseeing this division, ensuring that all of our city facilities are cared for properly to realize the longest lifespan out of them as possible. We have also put some money into this budget for HVAC and electrical training for our facilities maintenance personnel. I know that was that continues to be a council priority to ensure that we have some of that internal capability. So we are funding some training for that. some of the other costs associated with the increases. We are seeing that City Hall building is coming or has come out of warranty. So we're taking on a lot of the maintenance and repair costs associated with that. For instance, this year we started up two separate contracts for the HVAC in City Hall, that one of those being a quarterly maintenance, preventative maintenance program, and the other being an actual maintenance and repair service agreement. And that service agreement this year is already more than paid for itself in the repairs that we've had to have done to that system. We have also seen an increase in some of our support contracts due to bringing on the stormwater facilities, slight increase to our city pest control contract and those types of things. The janitorial contract, just taking on a few more facilities over there. So we do see a slight increase in those overall support contracts. And then we are allocating about $20,000 in this budget, expecting that we will have to do a complete rehab on a well at Fire Station 23. So this year we were able to rehab that well, but we need to make sure that we have some funds available for next year in case that rehab does not equal a permanent fix.
Thank you, Matt. Next, Director Doug Akins will present to you the Internal Services Fund for IT.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. In the IT Internal Services Fund, not a lot of changes from the current fiscal year. We are seeing an increase in allocations from departments who are paying in for replacement equipment next year. This is equipment that is end of life and is in need of being replacement. Laptops, services, things of that nature. We are requesting a new position this year. This year, we created a new division in our Department of Research and Development. We're really trying to drive efficiencies and innovation in the city. We've done things like the Alexa app, and with a lot of the integrations between different softwares we have, it's become more than one person can manage. So we're asking for that additional position. Also this year, we're trying to move towards more of a detailed allocation than in the past, so the departments are really paying for more of the IT services that they specifically use in their departments.
Matt, I had a question.
Yeah.
As far as the IT team internally, are they at all cross-trained on some of the newer applications? Is there any conversation around different certifications and those sorts of things?
What do you mean as far as newer applications?
Well, just since you're doing the research and efficiencies, I'm just wondering, looking forward, if there's a thought to training internally, in-house, those individuals that will be able to manage that application.
We do try to cross-train as much as possible between the different applications they do. Things like the drones are now, we're trying to expand that, the base of that. We have some people now who are learning more of this custom programming. We're trying to train in-house how to do these sorts of things and also break down the silos so that we're not having so much. We have people focused on certain areas they administer, but also cross-train so that if they're out, other people can pick up the slack and manage the applications also.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great just because, you know, I know it's important to know where all the wires are located and hooked up and everything else, and certainly making sure all these devices are working and everything that goes into that. But there is a lot more in our IT department as far as many different applications that are managed through your department. So I just want to make sure if there's an opportunity, I think it makes sense to make sure that looking forward, we have that cross-training capability. If there is someone that's down or is someone's out, and so we're not outsourcing it so much that it's so costly to do an upgrade, right, or change a field for a certain solution.
Yeah, a lot of it comes naturally in that some of the applications integrate and talk to one another. So somebody managing one has to work with the other one also, but we do try to, as much as possible, put in a structured cross-training.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Keep coughing. Part of the idea behind the allocation, this is the only true, aside from public safety, this is the only true new position request in the budget, and it really, a large part of this is going to be to facilitate the ERP process, which continues to be a critical path item for the city. It is not something that we cannot continue to move forward on. We are nearing end of life on some products. We are nearing end of term of contracts, and we know many of our platforms are just physically outdated. And so part of this, too, is ensuring as we embark on this ERP process, which you'll hear a little bit about today, I believe, in the budget, and additionally in the coming weeks as we go through this, you know, really embark on this process, it's making sure we have a programmer to backfill, as we've asked in that innovation triangle we've created in that new department, that we have the right project person to begin guiding us through, the appropriate staff member to guide us through, making sure we're allocating the right resources, because we need this to be extraordinarily successful for the city. This is something communities go through maybe once every decade or longer, and so the importance of this is extraordinarily high magnitude, and we want to make sure we're aligning to succeed with the council's priority.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Next is our communications fund, and as you can see, this fund was accumulating resources for our new radio communication system, which we did purchase this year, and it is up and running, and I know if you have further questions, the fire chief will be glad to answer them. But we have started working with the fire department for next year as a savings process for future purchases in years to come. This is our health insurance fund. As you can see, it's basically used to include our claims, our employee clinics, admin fees, our stop-loss insurance, wellness program, and other expenses related to our health insurance program. And next, Helena is going to cover all the remaining funds.
Thank you, Gwen. This is a look at our solid waste fund. As you can see, the increase is mainly due to new accounts that are added into our budget. The contract, I believe, has one more year, and Mr. Morton is team working on a plan for the future as far as the solid waste fund is concerned. Special events fund. This is funded mainly by the recycling revenue that comes with our solid waste contract. The events that are planned for today, but this is being monitored by our parks director as far as what will be able to be done in the COVID world. So even though we are proposing the $218,000 for the upcoming fiscal year, if we're not able to have some programs or if we have to modify the programs, then we'll certainly adapt. The Disaster Reserve Fund, we're pretty much wrapped up with our hurricane receipts for both Matthew and Irma. It was an extremely long process, but we're in the closeout process now, so our disaster reserve fund is back to the level that we wanted to be at. We have a small receivable for Hurricane Dorian that we are working with the state on, and then the next item on here is the CARES grant that we have currently with the county. The funds that are expended from here will be reimbursed at 100% for CARES. The CDBG fund, I believe, was presented to you by Jose Papa in the past three council meetings. So I don't really have anything in addition. If you have any specific questions, I'll take those. These are the remaining funds from the Enterprise Flagler dissolution, and the plan is to use these for our local business campaign, for the Shop Local, Buy Local, Shop Local campaign. So hopefully in the upcoming fiscal year, we'll be able to spend the remaining balance and close out this fund. The Old King Road Special Assessment is a special assessment collected from property owners for the Old Kings Road widening phase one. It's used to pay back the principal interest on the loan. The next agenda item is the assessment for the upcoming fiscal year. As you can see, there was an increase in the transportation impact fees transferred that comes from the transportation impact fee fund, and that was because of some of the development that happened within the district. Police Education Fund. These funds are used for the purpose of conducting advanced and specialized training for members of the Flagler County Sheriff's Office. So we receive these funds for fines collected within the city. We receive them from the clerk of court, and then we submit them to the sheriff upon request. This is the balance left from the Neighborhood Stabilization Fund. And I believe Jose, when he presented the plan to City Council, intends to move these funds to the CDBG to support those programs. That concludes our presentation. We'd like to remind the public that we have this presentation, past presentations, and all of the budget worksheets on the city's website. We do have a tile, as soon as you get to the city's website, that take you directly to the fiscal year 2021 budget preparation. At this point, I'll take any questions.
Seeing none, thank you very much, Helena.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number 2, which is a resolution approving the Old Kings Road Special Assessment Roll to be transmitted to the Flagler County Tax Collector.
Elena is here to present on that this morning.
Good morning again, Mayor, City Council. This is our annual Old Kings Road assessment roll. Basically, upon approval of the resolution at the next business meeting, we will submit to the tax collector so that it may be included in the fall on the property tax bills. I'll take any questions of council.
Seeing none.
Thank you.
We'll now move to agenda item number 3, which is an ordinance amending Article Communications Rights of Way of Chapter 42, Streets, Roads, Bridges, and Other Public Places of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Palm Coast.
Thank you again, Honorable Mayor, City Council. We have an ordinance bringing us into compliance with directives from the Florida State Legislature. And that's what these are, is consistency ordinances. We have Don Cooley here today to discuss, and Nasa Borkett, who's our city attorney today for Bill Reichman, has worked extensively on both items 3 and 4, and also will be here to answer questions and provide some information on these two items.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Can you hear me? Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to validate. So thank you for giving me the time to present to you, Mayor and Council. Gosh bless. I'm trying to get to my slideshow. So, play from current slide. Okay, so this is a project that I've been working on with NASA Borkert, our community development department, Ray Tyner, our consultants, Diamond Tower, and several others. And so to give you a little bit of background, back in July 1, 2017, before my time here with the city, I know that our city worked with our partners, Diamond Tower, and the legal team to amend our ordinance for the small cell wireless and sites. And so that statute was amended back then on 2017. Fast forward to 2016 or 2018, the ordinance was amended, to safeguard the public interest and protect residential areas from potential adverse effects of the communication towers. So we were trying to make sure that we protected the city's interest. And since that time, the rules in Florida state statutes have changed. And so they have adopted new rules that actually took place in July 1, 2019. Since I came on board with the city, I began working with our legal team and some of the other folks to make sure that we were in compliance with all these Florida state statutes and federal rules about small cells and anything located within the government right-of-way for small wireless facilities. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about the process that we went through. We had an ordinance review team, if you will, which included the staff of the FiberNet, the Community Development Department, which was Jay Ray Tyner and Jason DiLorenzo. We had a team of people from the permitting involved as well. We have our legal team with Nisa Borker and Bill Reichman and Katie. And then we also had Diamond Tower involved. And then after we went through and put together the revisions, we NISA floated this stuff out to Verizon Wireless and AT&T for comment, just to make sure that we could address any potential pain points that they may have so that we can have a smooth flow whenever we do receive applications for small cell. So one of the things we had to do to get ready for this process is we had to send out written notifications of the ordinance change to people who exist currently in our right-of-way so that they had an opportunity to understand what we're getting ready to do. And then we put the public posting in the paper, and then I made a mistake on this slide. This is actually not the first read. This is just us introducing it in the workshop level, and then we will have the second read, consequently, and adoption in October once we get past the 60-day requirement for notifications for those vendors in the right-of-way. So one of the things that I wanted to point out here is this is not by any means a full-on comprehensive view, but I pulled out some of the salient points that we really needed to think about and why we're trying to protect the city. So the small cell statute that is put in place now and the changes preempt a home rule authority by limiting what we can charge for a company to co-locate in our space in the right-of-way or on a municipal pole. And then it also kind of controls and puts a shot clock on our permit review procedures and approval procedures. So it could be a 30 or 60 day shot clock at the max, depending on what we run into. I think typically, and Nisa, you correct me if I'm wrong, it's typically 30 days, but if there's any engineering issues that need to be addressed, a maximum of 60. Then they also place some limitations on the bonds that we can require for facilities that are being installed in the right-of-way, which this bond really is about the damages that occur while they're installing their work on the right-of-way. So we are limited to our ability to how much we can charge. We worked with the permitting team and community development to determine what the appropriate amount of bond would be for this. And so that will be considered or put inside this new ordinance. Then the registration procedures. We can't, as a city, charge permit fees now because we receive funds from the communication tax. So that kind of limits our ability to what we can do over on the permitting side. And then we may not prevent wireless providers from co-locating on our facilities and poles. And then also we're responsible, I'm sorry, it's a security company. We may not prevent them from joining on there, and then if something happens and one of our poles is damaged or whatever, we may be responsible to get the pole back to the condition it was so that they could get their stuff on the pole again.
Hey, Don, can I interrupt for 1 second?
Sure.
That number where basically what we were limited to charging them, I remember this revolved around that Senate Bill 596, and I think it was something like $25 or something, just to put in perspective for the rest of the council. It was extremely low when it came through legislation, if I remember correctly, but I don't know if you had any insight on that. But I distinctly remember something like $25 per piece of equipment on a pole in our right-of-way, if that resonates with our city council. It can kind of understand that that's minimal, to say the least.
I think that's increased, Nisa, correct me if I'm wrong, to I think it's 100 now.
Nice.
There's, well, what you have to understand is, and for the record, this is Nisa Borkert, Assistant City Attorney. the amount that can be charged as far as the permit fee goes is like $150. However, since the City of Palm Coast collects the communication services tax, we cannot require a permit fee. The statute gives you an option either or. You either collect the communication services tax or you charge this permit fee. Since we collect the communication services tax, we effectively, under the statute, can't charge any fee. So it's actually zero.
I thought there was a fee that we were allowed to charge the telecommunication companies for actually co-locating their small cell on our equipment, our telephone, or our power lights, or street lights, excuse me.
Well, I think that's to Nasa's point.
We can give one or the other.
Yeah.
Got it.
Don, can I ask you a question? This ordinance review team, can you tell me who was on this ordinance review team?
Yes, it would be our legal team, Nasa Barker, and I think I'm sure that Bill Reichman was involved. Myself, Donna Cobos, and then Ray Tyner and Jason DiLorenzo, and then I believe that some of their staff was involved in that as well, because it does in fact you know, the right-of-ways, and that they're all responsible for those. I believe at some point I even had Carl Cody from their department involved as well in some of these meetings.
Was everybody comfortable with the process? Everybody in there, you felt they were comfortable?
Yes. I felt like everybody had some really good feedback and input, and to your point, Councilor Branquino, we're actually meeting internally as a team tomorrow, so we can talk about internal processes to make sure that as a city, we're meeting all these timelines and requirements and understanding what we can and cannot do under the new ordinance.
Yeah, because I just don't want anybody to feel awkward. That's what I'm saying. That's why I ask if the team felt comfortable working together.
I think they did, yes.
When you're dealing with a state mandate.
Yeah.
That was it. Exactly.
That was it. No, you don't have to answer anymore. That was it. Thank you.
Thank you. So the benefits to the city, I'm honored to pull out some points here. You know, we're going to have an updated ordinance that's compliant with federal and state legislation, which we have to do. We're out of the result of this, we're going to have a framework for our permitting department, so we develop processes with respect to the telecommunication and the small cell infrastructure. And then this, in turn, helps us mitigate potential risk for noncompliance, because there's definitely some hefty fees and some litigation that could be resulting if we weren't compliant for some of the statutes that are involved. It's a huge ordinance. I think it's right around 40 pages total, and I didn't think that this is the right platform for putting out 40 pages of anything. But one of the things, when we're all done with this, when we meet to finish this, we hope to adopt the ordinance and amend our right-of-way communications right-of-way. And then the next item, it's on this as well, and I'm just going to throw that out there. There was only one small change. It was not considered material, so that didn't need to go to the Land Development Review Board because they were just changing the definition of co-location, and this is something that NASA helped us with, and Ray and Jason were both involved with respect to that.
Hey, Donald, is there a way to potentially forecast what we could realize in gains from these type of operations by these telecommunication companies, or is that such a there's far too many variables, because we don't really know the intent of the rollout of installation of these small cellular antennas across municipal infrastructure in the state, let alone the country? Can you give us any insight on how you see this progressing from inside city walls versus integrating with these private companies, and have they been conducive to working with the city? Because they were pretty much given very heavy-handedly all the rights that they wanted to, all they wanted or needed to be able to slap their equipment in a right of ways, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of subjective to really quantify that, because it really depends on the number of apparatus they want to put in a given area. And I would just say, in the conversations, and Ms. Porkert's been there with me as well in these conversations that we have, they have actually been pretty amenable, the ones that we've been working with so far, to trying to help make sure that we address the city's concerns and a lot of those things as we're moving forward, and try to make sure that they work more in partnership with us, although, you know, we all are aware that they could like you said, do what they wanted to do. I think they're more looking at trying to seek a partnership with the city, you know, and I try to encourage them actually as well, and I've opened up the door for the conversation for them to actually utilize our current fiber network infrastructure, if at all possible, when they're installing this new stuff to support their stuff, so their equipment, so they don't have to do a lot of construction and have a lot of construction costs to complete their projects.
That's great to hear. Is fostering a relationship with these type of providers is essential, because like you said, they're pretty much given the right to do whatever they want to. So if we can work with them, that's even some more superior option, and maybe we can find something that's a little bit more advantageous for the city by working together. So good to hear.
Well, I know that, for example, and I shouldn't say this, but I will, that Verizon Wireless, for instance, one of the people on their team actually has a person with a local vested interest in this community, because he has family and he's from here. So when he's thinking about that, he understands from the citizen perspective as to, you know, how important a partnership, especially in this region, is.
Yep, for sure. And I think I once reached out to someone named Heather Duncan from AT&T, who had talked a little bit about their plans, but again, it was from such a high corporate level that you're much more on the ground and in the know than I was at that point. So, cool.
I don't know if is there anything that I missed, Nasa, that we should convey?
Yeah, I'll just point out a couple things. And also, I'm available to answer any questions that the council may have as far as what are the differences between our existing code and what we're proposing here. But let me just lay down some fundamentals. First and foremost, the statute was amended in 2019, as Don said. Basically, what it did was take what they did in 2017 and remove the portion of that statute that says that local governments can apply its rules and regulations governing the placement of utility poles for small wireless facility co-locates within its right-of-way. That was deleted. So instead of being able to apply our typical right-of-way regulations to these specific facilities, although we can still do it for other types of utility providers, it took that away, and it added this whole new section regarding the placement of these small wireless facilities on utility poles that are existing within our right-of-ways, and then in instances where they're not existing or there's not some other wireless support structure to put those on. What it also did was added a clause that said, hey, local governments, even if you haven't amended your code yet, you still have to apply what's in the statute. So regardless of if our code says one thing, we still have to apply the statute. And to just bolster that, it also added a cause of action for those entities that want to locate within the right-of-way that are aggrieved by any of our rules and regulations that are in place. So when I tell you we're against a rock and a hard place, it's absolutely the case as far as the necessity of having to amend our code to be consistent with what the state statute provides as to wireless facilities. Remember, these changes that we're talking about in here are specific to utility poles and communication facilities and small wireless facilities within the city's rights of way. Okay, we're not talking about DOT rights of way, county rights of way. Those are all their own to be controlled. This is just within the city, and it's just as it pertains to rights of way. What we've worked on doing to the best extent we can is that what the statute does allow for in a very limited manner is to implement objective design standards as to contacts, location, color of those facilities that are being placed within our rights of way. So for example, we have a condition that requires them to make the wireless facility the same color as the utility pole that it's located on. It requires ground facilities to be green to match the surrounding area. To the best extent possible, we've required them to implement stealthing, to integrate some of their facilities into light poles, because you know, utility poles can also be lighting poles. There's a general description of wireless support structures within right-of-way that doesn't just limit it to a utility pole. It can be other things that are located within that right-of-way. So we've tried to the best extent possible to make sure that these facilities are integrated in the most aesthetically pleasing way that we can. We're also limited by two things. The statute sets out the size of the wireless communication facility, which is 6 cubic feet in volume. That is for the facility that's placed on the pole. For the ground facility, it's wireless equipment on the ground that's limited to 28 cubic feet in volume. The statute also has restricted our ability to limit heights, but what it's done is basically if there's a pole, an existing pole in the area and it has to be replaced, that pole has to be consistent in height to other poles within 500 feet within that right-of-way. Or if there's no other utility pole in the area, then the height's restricted to 50 feet. No wireless facilities can be placed on any poles that are 15 feet or less. So those are just some of the things that have changed that we've tried to implement here. Another thing that the statute did was remove the ability for the city to require a performance bond or other security. However, the city can still require a construction bond. And that the intent of that is that so when a wireless provider comes in and puts their facilities on the pole in the right-of-way, if there's any groundwork that needs to be done or disturbances, that performance bond makes sure that the right-of-way is put back to the condition it was before the work started. And we worked with staff as far as trying to figure out the amount of that bond, how much each facility, how much should the bond be for each communication facility, because what the statute also requires us to do is allow for providers to consolidate applications so they can have, for example, 30 wireless facilities in one application. It's not just one permit for one pole, co-location on a pole. There can be up to 30 in that application. So that's just quickly, I'm just trying to check over my notes to see if there was anything else that stuck out. The other change was that our current code, and this was permitted in the ordinance, allows for the city to set up a registration process where providers have to register with the city. In our current code, I believe the re-registration was every other year, but the statute changed that to every 5 years. They have to re-renew their registration to be within the right-of-way. The last thing that I'll hit on, and then I'll take any questions that you may have, is as Don mentioned, there's one change to the land development code that needed to occur, and that was for the definition of co-location. And basically what that did was we're updating it to be not only consistent with the statute, but what the statutory definition did was to add in this new requirement that a wireless support structure on a utility pole is different from putting in a new pole. So that standard and putting in a new pole or putting in a new wireless support structure is handled by a different section of the Florida statutes. So for co-location purposes, that definition is limited to when you're placing a small wireless facility on an existing pole for co-location. New poles don't matter. One more item that I forgot to mention, and this is going to be something that we work with staff further as far as how to actually implement this code when we have an application that comes in, how to run it smoothly through the process, is make ready work. So make ready work is when you have a utility pole that may not be built to the standard that it can handle additional weight. Let's just say it's a weight issue and a small wireless facility wants to exist on an existing utility pole that doesn't have the structural integrity it may need. The city has the option of doing the design and engineering and then having the having experts review it and having the applicant pay the city to do the work. but you don't get you only get reimbursed for the work that's done. You don't get reimbursed for the experts that you maybe you had to come in to do the design work on it. Or you can say to the provider, listen, this utility pole can't handle the weight of this. You have to perform the make-ready work, and you have to get it all done and pay for it. And then they have to move forward in doing that. And there's a time frame for doing that. So with that, I'll leave it open for any further questions. I know I went through all that quickly, and it probably sounds Greek, but I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
One clarification that I just wanted to put out there for our council was the size of this equipment that these guys can install, that they're legally allowed to install. I think the upper limit for equipment installed on the ground level is, like you said, 28 cubic feet, and that's roughly the same size as a French door refrigerator, for point of reference for our council members. And then the pole-mounted equipment, I think, was 6 cubic feet, so much smaller. But the ones that are on the ground are essentially able to be the size of French door refrigerators.
I anticipate they're similar size to what you would see for some of the cable equipment that's on the street corner right now, the big enclosures.
Councilmember Cuff?
Yes, I just a clarification on use of poles. All of the items that you were just discussing, that doesn't necessarily apply to poles that are owned, say, by Florida Power and Light, unless these providers strike a deal with FPL. Is that correct? In other words, we have to allow them on our poles, but FPL doesn't have to allow them on their poles. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes, we have to allow them within our right-of-way and on our poles. As far as private utilities and what they have to do, that's covered separately.
Just out of curiosity, this small cells infrastructures, can we call them repeaters? Is that what it is, or is...
That's a fair way to think about it, Councilmember Brinkino. I would say repeaters or just micro cell towers like we may have in our household to boost our cell phone signals. So like boosters or repeaters, I think that's a fair way to assess them.
Point-to-point wireless is probably even a better description. So if you think about that, it's kind of like an antenna, and they have to, for small cell, they have to be closer together, Councilor Branquino, and that's why they're going to do the small cell, because otherwise you could use the big tower to do that.
Because I have no notion what this thing looks like. Is that like a little dish, or is that a box on top of a... I have no idea what it looks like.
It really depends on the company, sir, and the aperture that they're going to put on there. I can certainly get together some samples for visual of what people are using out there, so you, for the next meeting that we all have, so you can kind of get a clear understanding of what to expect.
Thank you. That's it.
It's not like the tin cans with the string in between, Donald?
Well, maybe.
Well, I appreciate you being here today, because normally we have Bill, and Bill explains things in a different way than just directly hitting the points. So I appreciate your presentation. Always appreciate Bill's, but I think you clearly stated every point and certainly highlighted the areas in which we're going to have to make some decisions on and approvals. And as you said, you know, this is out of our hands. This has been dictated by the state of Florida, so it's keeping consistent with what they have applied to the law. So appreciate that very much. I had a quick question since you mentioned Heather Duncan, Nick. Don, who are you talking to with AT&T? Because I've known Heather for many years. She's no longer with AT&T.
The person I worked with was Kevin, and I don't have the other contact person up on my screen. I'm sorry, Madam Mayor, but I could get you that information if you'd like.
If I could just, we asked, you know, part of the reason, as I, if you remember at the beginning of my talk, was that you know, the statute gives aggrieved parties the ability to bring an action against the city. So in the abundance of legal caution, we sent this out, the proposed ordinance to Verizon AT&T. We did that through Diamond Towers was our contact that helped us because they're really talking to these people. And also we've had some, you know, in some of our other cities that our firm represents, they've worked with people too. So we tried to get them to facilitate and send out. And we did get comments back from Verizon, and I have integrated all the ones that I thought were legally sufficient, not necessarily. You know, we're lawyers. We can't agree on everything. So we've integrated some of that in the hopes of, you know, working with everybody. That, you know, a substantial amount of comments were integrated. So
well, that's actually important, I think. So the other cities you represent, do you see those, the small cell towers now popping up?
We have not had any actually come up. However, we have had ones that are talking. So once the... Our hope is to get all this in place so that when we do have a permit that comes in, it will be handled correctly. But in some of our other cities, one aspect that has helped them, I think we have one other city that's currently may have some interest there, and they've been talking to a provider. As Don mentioned, there's a strict shot clock turnaround on these. 60 days is like the max. Now, you can get a little bit more time through the statute. If, for example, say someone wants to come in and put a facility on a pole that just is a decorative pole, or one that you really don't have room to accommodate that facility on the existing pole because there's other things on it, there's a negotiation period where you can negotiate with the provider that's coming in to try to find an alternate location. And that gives you a little bit more time. So I think a lot of the cities now, we're kind of telling them, listen, get this done as soon as possible, but you do have this little wiggle room where you can negotiate and try to work with. So this kind of goes back to what you said previously. It's important to keep those connections so that when providers do come in, we can have the sufficient amount of time, staff can have the sufficient amount of time to review these applications and make sure we're compliant with the code and can address all the issues that may come up.
I agree. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Nothing more? Okay, and that also addresses agenda item number 4. So we will move to written items, which is agenda item number 5, a resolution approving procurement of the city's insurance program, including property, general liability, auto, and workers' compensation coverage, and related services from Public Risk Insurance Advisors.
Thank you again, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Some discussion today on potentially changing risk insurance providers for the city. If you recall, by way of the budget process last year, we had come up for renewal and received a significant increase in our premium. And through conversations and an ask for reconsideration of that premium increase, Florida League of Cities did, in fact, reduce substantially what they were going to charge us for this fiscal year for the premium. From that situation, it was decided that we probably should go out and take a look and see what the marketplace will bear and what the insurance markets. Insurance markets have been extraordinarily difficult in the last couple of years locally. It's not related to this year, believe it or not, but for the last 5 years, the conversations on how difficult it is for certain municipalities to gain insurance because of natural disasters. Florida squarely fits into that category. There's also been a lot of civil rights lawsuits, a lot of police action lawsuits, and a changing landscape where the insurers and what's known as the reinsuring agencies have left the marketplace, and those that have remained are hiking their premiums. So we want to go out, test that marketplace, and see what the city's best position was. So we've got a couple things happening today. So a team did get together to review, to actually send out a proposal and take responses. We received only 2. Again, I think that goes back to that nature of the insurance and reinsurance markets and how difficult they are at this moment in history for municipal insurance and reinsurance. So Tim's here today, and I know Renina as well, to talk through what we experienced in that proposal. and then now subsequently, and NASA's here also for that today. We've had some legal review. We want to have some conversation around that after the proposal. It's at the end of the day, we want to make sure we've compared apples to apples and the several key issues to the city that will continue to be important to us, like disaster management, premium credits, just making sure that we didn't just look at price, and I'm confident the team did some very heavy lifting and some good work. We've just had some issue spotting that we want to talk about. I'm going to wind up recommending at the end of the discussion that our team get together with the review, and that was Anthony, correct, NASA, who does this. That's one of his expertises, to make sure we've adequately addressed all the questions so we know what we're buying, and making sure that it's not just initial dollar savings up front, but that we have confidence that in the event of a large claim or subsequent claims or through the litigation process, you know, how much control we still have as we've come to enjoy, that those issues are definitely answered beyond a shadow. And we did get some questions. So with that, I will ask Tim and Renina to go ahead and walk us through the FMIT and PMIT proposals and what the committee has analyzed and looked at and what the recommendation and discussion items are for today.
Renina, you're still muted.
Thank you, Mr. Morton, and good morning, Mayor, City Council. As was just previously stated, we are here today seeking approving procurement of the city's insurance program. The state of Florida insurance regulations require the city of Palm Coast to maintain specific insurances. So in order for us to select an appropriate service, a request for proposal for our property, general liability, and our workers' compensation insurance program was conducted. The responses were due back to us by June 18th. The city's proposal requested bid was on our current coverage. The selected respondent is expected to perform services to include reviewing and evaluating the city's needs, as well as looking for ways to make sure that we are offering alternatives for evaluation and cost effectiveness, and also we stay in compliance with all the federal, state, and local rules. We had two firms respond to the RFP within the required time frame. The two respondents were ranked by a review committee from Finance, HR, and Public Works. And based on the review, the Public Risk Insurance Advisors, PREA, was highly ranked, and it was recommended unanimously that we go forward with PREA to be awarded the ability to provide insurance services for FY21. The term of the service would be from October 1st, 2020 to until October 1st, 2021, with four each 1 year. Premiums for these insurances are allocated to each department and split between all funds. I'm going to now turn it over to Tim Willsley, our Benefits and Risk Management Coordinator, to go through some other details.
Thank you, Renina. Good morning, Mayor, City Council. So what you see on your screen now is just a timeline of what the bid process looked like. May 27th, we opened it for submissions. They submitted all their submissions by June 18th, which was a deadline. And on June 30th, the notice of intent to award was sent out. Today is August 11th, and then we'll have another presentation on the 18th for a vote. Next slide. This is just some background information on PREA, kind of give you a history of who they are. PREA is a Brown & Brown subsidy. They are basically an advisor who uses PGIT, PGIT, as the insurance company. They specialize insurance for public entities within the state of Florida. And for the entire state, they, if you can see down below, it says insurance services to 70 cities, 25 counties, 6 public schools, and 150 special taxing districts. Just shows that they have a good experience with public entities, and that's all they write is public entities. So there's not a conflict or anything. Next slide. So these are some of the proposal highlights that you see. If you'll see in the coming slides is some other the actual breakdown, but the savings of $130,000 compared to the expiring policy, the current expiring policy, $88,000 compared to the FMIT's new quote. So FMIT submitted a quote and it still saved us $88,000 over that. Again, there's the next line is very important to us right now. There's no exclusions within our policy or sublimits related to COVID, pandemic, or communicable disease. That was a point of question. Auto liability coverage. Currently, there's no deduct. Or currently, we have a $25,000 deductible under FMIT. The proposed plan and policy has a $0 deductible, which could be a huge savings for us. Agreed value claims with no depreciation for all city fire and heavy trucks. FMIT provides claim payments, including depreciation. So if something tragic was to happen to one of our units, we would be able to negotiate an amount for settlement and without depreciation. Coverage for sewer backups is greatly improved. Policy includes $200,000 limit for property damage claims with no initial cleanup only limitation. That's currently what we have is a $10,000 cleanup only limitation. This new policy would do up to $200,000 if the city was deemed at fault. Named windstorm coverage for all of our locations. Our current coverage excludes about 12 locations, so all of our locations within the city would now be covered. In addition to that, our windstorm deductible is reduced from our current 5% to 3%, which is a huge savings overall for the city if there was a major event. In addition to that, the much improved coverage for the EEOC complaints, injunction relief, and non-monetary claims, and they do offer a turnkey disaster recovery program as well, similar to FMIT's. Next slide. This slide and the next slide, which you've all received previously, actually goes down and shows you a comparison from FMIT to PREA, and on the right side, you'll see the notes what it covers, and there's a blanket, what the limits are. You can read through that if there's any questions, we can take it. And the following slide is just the second portion because I didn't want to make it too small for you guys to read. Okay. And that is it. I believe that's the, there's one more just as questions, but that's it.
Council, any questions or comments? Just thank you to the committee who put this together, and I'm assuming you're going to work with legal for any of the issues that were brought forward.
Yes, yeah, the process wasn't intentionally segmented because, our current legal counsel also does a lot of litigation work on behalf of the city through the League of Cities, and there were some unanswered questions, including that, what control do we have over ongoing litigation? So we wanted to bring those issues to the public forum. We value the work the committee did, but wanted those issues to become publicly acknowledged so that we can now ask the committee to work with legal for any final review, to answer some questions, to make sure, again, that we're getting that value that we believe we're getting out of a potential switch. This is a huge, obviously, of concern to the council and the community, so that when we come back, we can confidently answer the questions and make a recommendation.
So any individuals that are, working through the league, this would be sort of, are they familiar with the League of Cities, this company that was selected?
Yes, very much so.
Okay, so they have a relationship that works considerably with them, so they understand.
Right, PREA's main focus is public entity, and the League's main focus is also public entity, but they do have some other sectors as well.
And so the ongoing litigation, Matt, that we would see, I'm just trying to think of one. I'm not familiar with ongoing litigation that the city has, but that would still be carried over through the new contract?
So that's one of the questions I have is at point of change of coverage when the date comes that Typically you have your ongoing litigation, ongoing entailments can see some point of conclusion through the new provider and is funded under the terms of either the wind down of the old insurance policy or the inclusions into the new insurance policy. I think the bigger question as well was, I think to date, and the committee or NASA can correct me, we've enjoyed some opportunities to make some decisions on litigation issues. Sometimes there will be thresholds or more monetary policy issues. I'll give you a great example. This is just totally hypothetical. Someone comes, has a claim against city for a trip and fall. A lot of times an insurance company will look at that claim and say, no, we are not going to litigate. We don't believe you were. It doesn't matter whether the city was right or wrong. We just believe in settling, and that's the practice we establish. And those can have all kinds of, you know, consequences to the organization, to the community. So we want to make sure those things, we have some autonomy where appropriate, and then when we, and if, I guess it's an if, we get into different litigation, what flexibility do we have to pick, so to speak, or direct who we want to represent the city? Is this new group just going to assign counsel? What autonomy do we have to say, no, we would like this litigator, or we think that this is a more appropriate, you know, course of strategy? So I think there's just some high-level questions that I know I've not met with the committee extensively yet. We wanted to let the process work in its full. And so, again, that gap, we're going to answer those questions so we can come back more confident, I think, with just some nuanced things. And Nasa, you're welcome to speak. That again, could have big potential impacts. We just want to make sure that we haven't missed anything in our due diligence. And again, not devaluing, the committee did a tremendous amount of work on this.
Right. So, you know, we have worked with both of these companies, and both are very good companies. They're the two largest providers in the state as far as to local governments go. And also, as Matt said, you know, during this time frame, we've had the pleasure of being the city attorney for the city of Palm Coast, and then also through the league litigating some of these insurance claims. So we wanted to make sure, you know, this process ran the way that it did, too. But Anthony Garganisi in our office is the one that works primarily on these types of claims and, you know, in going through kind of an initial level, wanted to make sure that the coverage that is being afforded now also transpires over to this potential new provider, that things that we as our firm, as being the city attorney and also through these, you know, defending insurance claims, the things we've seen in the past, making sure that, you know, the breadth of those claims, the kind of things that we see that are maybe particular to Palm Coast, make sure that there's adequate coverage for those and that they'll be handled, you know, appropriately in the manner that's been directed by, you know, the previous council and staff, city manager. So yeah, we're just looking for some time to further review and make sure that the, you know, we can say, okay, here's the differences we see or not, and then leave it up obviously to the city council and staff to make the final determination. But, you know, we work both with, as I said, both companies are both great companies, and really it's just going to be a matter of making sure that the council and that staff has all the information and we can provide our insight on that.
And in the interim, when you're reviewing, nothing gets interrupted as far as the current
nothing. No, okay. We're still just, you know, we have our agreements and the city's has their agreement with the current provider, and that will continue, and you know, until a change is made, final change is made.
Councilmember Cuff.
Yes, just I think I know the answer to this, but just so I'm clear, the litigation that, you know, we're told is being quote unquote handled through the League of Cities, that's because we are currently insured with FMIT.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so I mean, that's what I thought was the case, but I mean, it's not because we pay our dues to the Florida League of Cities and they provide some kind of insurance. That's an actual insurance contract that's administered through them. And this other proposed coverage would not be. You say this was administered actually by Brown and Brown, was that?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
So there's that, and then, you know, some little nuance issues, the subrogation of claims questions, and just some little things that we want to make sure, again, that we're bringing, you know, those last-minute details to the council and the committee.
None. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. We'll now move to agenda item number 6, which is a resolution approving the final nuisance abatement assessment.
Thank you once again, Honorable Mayor, City Council. This was brought to you on July 21st, 2020, for the adoption of the initial assessment under Resolution 2020-80. relating to our nuisance abatement special assessment. We have now prepared the final assessment roll, and it is here today for council for consideration. Obviously, we'll come to the business meeting. Notice has been provided, and I believe Barbara Grossman is here today to answer any questions. Or Jason, are you handling that?
Yeah, it's me. Thank you, sir. Good morning, Mayor, City Council. Yep, this is the final roll, which will be on your agenda next week on the 18th. As a reminder to the public, when the city expends tax dollars for nuisance abatement on a particular property, we then bill the property to recover those funds. And if we don't recover them through billing, then we send them to the tax roll to be collected. That's what this is. Over this final week between today's workshop and the 18th, if any payments come in, the roll will be adjusted, and then we will send the roll to the tax collector's office.
Also, any questions or comments? Okay, thank you, Jason. We'll now move to agenda item number 7, which is a resolution approving a contract with S.E. Klein Construction and a work order with CPH for the Citation Parkway Improvement Project.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Carl kind of gave us the cheat sheet preview here, so rather than me introduce, I will just ask Carl to go ahead and speak to council on the improvements.
Yes, good morning again. This particular item is for the construction of a project. There are many initiatives that are gonna be included in this project. One of them addresses the bridge concern, a failing bridge at the end of Sesame at the intersection with Citation. At that particular location, it's also where Citation dead ends. So there's a 90-degree intersection there at the stop sign from Sesame. This realignment is actually going to remove that 90-degree intersection, and it will ultimately basically extend Sesame up to Seminole Woods. So that 90-degree intersection goes away, the culvert pipes, the bridge gets replaced. Currently, there is also a sidewalk along Sesame and a sidewalk along Seminole Woods, and this segment of roadway does not have a sidewalk or path. This project will also include adding that path along that segment. We are also adding some safety improvements, some turn lanes. On Seminole Woods, there'll be a left and a right turn lane to turn onto the existing Citation roadway, and as well as a left turn lane to turn onto Euler Turn. Once you're on Citation, there's a roadway to the north, so there'll be a left turn lane added there as well. So a multitude of improvements. There's also some utility infrastructure enhancements, improvements that will be going in place while we're doing construction. We're making use of that work to put in those utility needs at this time as well. So it's basically a full service project, lots of parts and pieces, we're all rolled into one contract. We did receive 5 bids. They're very close. There's, I think, less than 9%, about 8.5% between the high bid and the low bidder. Klein, a local contractor, was the low bidder. This project came in within the amounts that we had projected to be for our construction estimate. They'd be starting up here right in the beginning of the new fiscal year. It's a fairly long project. I think it's about 9-10 months long. So this project is ready to move forward with your approval. It also includes engineering services. CPH design completed the design phase of the project, CPH engineers, and we have them on board to assist with the construction, engineering, inspection, administration during the construction phase of the project. We also are looking to approve a contingency as well. So the construction contract, the 10% contingency, and then just over $150,000 for the CEI services portion of the project. So it's split between, I think, 4 different funds in here because there's some utility portions of the project that are being funded through the utility fund.
Council, any questions or comments on this agenda item? Just very appreciative. We're keeping it local. That's important. So grateful that we have local contractors that bid on these services and local contractors that supply jobs here locally. Congratulations to Klein Construction, and thank you for all you do in our community. Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number 8, which is a resolution approving a work order with England, Timms, and Miller Incorporated to provide engineering services for phase one development of the water quality monitoring program.
Thank you once again, Honorable Mayor, City Council. This is to help us ensure our compliance with our city's national pollutant discharge and emissions systems permitting, our MS4 permitting requirements. This is going to help identify degraded surface waters, and I think more importantly, identify grant opportunities for developing best management practices as we continue to monitor and think about projects and priorities for our watershed. And we have Mike Peel here to introduce and discuss this item and answer any questions you may have.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. This is to help us kind of stay ahead of our requirements associated with our NPDES permit, is to help us to identify impaired bodies, establish a program to determine parameters and protocols and methods for sampling water quality, to help us determine potential best management practices to improve water quality. This program will initially help us, we'll focus on areas that we think are of primary concern. It's also to help us identify potential illicit discharge, which is a primary focus of our NPDES permit requirements. It will also help us identify potential grant opportunities as we move forward.
Great. Doug, are there any questions from the public? Okay, thank you. Any questions here? No, we'll move on. Thank you so much, Mike. Appreciate the presentation. We'll now move to agenda item number 9, which is a resolution approving a contract and a work order with Texas Aquatic Harvesting for the repair replacement of a seawall located along the City Row on Clubhouse Drive between Castle Court and Carroll Court.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. We have Don Traeger here to discuss and introduce today a limited replacement of some seawalls that are beyond their expected functional life on some city-owned rights-of-way ends. Mr. Traeger.
Good morning. This is pretty straightforward. On our saltwater canals, the city owns approximately 24 canals like this, where the canals stop at the city right away. It's actually nobody's personal property. Every year we budget to replace one of these or maintain one of them. We went out locally. I reached out to 3 different vendors for this one in particular, and all 3 of them came back over the $30,000 limit to do the repairs, and because repairs weren't going to be feasible, it was going to be a replacement. So we went out to bid. Even when we did the bidding process, I reached out to those same 3 bidders. I was a little disappointed that they didn't choose to bid a second time. So going through the process, this vendor is new to us, but I've spoken to them, and they're well qualified. It should be a pretty straightforward project and well needed. If that seawall itself, the panels have failed, and there's quite a bit of erosion. It's actually a hazard if anybody actually walks down there. So looking forward to getting it done.
So Don, why, I know you reached out to them, and I really appreciate you doing that. You know, that is something that's critical, again, fueling the local economy. Did they indicate why all 3 did not choose to bid?
Honestly, they're all busy. Okay. And this isn't as straightforward as new construction. They're all smaller vendors, and they're used to doing new home construction. They're all, or whether they do seawalls or whether they do boathouses or docks. This is a little different for that. It's got some complications associated with it. So they all three of them chose to just pass.
Okay. But it wasn't, the process was too cumbersome, or they didn't give any explanation on that?
They all found it cumbersome, but these are smaller local vendors.
Okay.
And for the most part, it was their first time going through it. Jesse was actually a big help supplying information to them, but okay, they chose not.
Any questions, counsel? Thank you so much, Don. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number 10, which is a resolution approving piggybacking the Sourcewell contract with Staples Contract and Commercial for the purchase of office supplies.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. This is a as-needed purchase contract that stays within the identified city budgeted line items for small office supplies and similar. This contract has been reviewed and is more advantageous because of the general pricing structure. Again, this will be only for office supplies on an as-needed basis, things we need either on a daily or a small item basis, and will stay within budgeted funds and line items.
Also, any questions? Okay, we'll end that portion of our agenda. We'll now open it up for public participation. Any member of the public wish to make public comment, please call in at 386-223-1690. Please hit *9 to unmute yourself. Thank you so much. We'll close public comment. Discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. We'll start with Councilmember Branquino, then I'll go to Councilmember Ness.
Okay, just basically I just want to, once again, thanks Mr. Ness for taking the goodwill to come and help us a little bit throughout this process until someone else comes in. And I hope you didn't find it too boring today.
Not at all.
A little PTSD comes back. I know, comes back with long agenda items. Council Member Nutz.
The only comment I would have is, comparing what I've seen today in terms of staff preparation for these agenda items to what was done 10 years ago, 15 years ago, no question that it's become better, more efficient, more professional. I was very much impressed with the background information that was presented. Congratulations
to
the city manager and his staff.
Thank you.
We're the best. We are.
Vice Mayor Clufus.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. First, I would just say it's refreshing to hear John say that. It really gives me a good sense of comfort that we're moving in the right direction and that every day we're striving to be better. So oftentimes we talk about trying to live a better life and work harder and produce better output, and that's quantifying it like that is validation. So thank you, John. I appreciate that. And I'm sure Priscilla is thankful that you are here and not at home, but Ms. Mayor, I don't have anything else to add today. But again, thank you, John, for stepping in, and I'm very thankful to hear that you feel like we're moving in the right direction, because you're one of the only ones with the direct experience sitting in this seat over a generation.
Council Member Cuff.
Yes, I did have one question for staff. Am I correct in understanding that we are looking for additional or replacement members for the PLDRB, either Mr. Morton or Mr. DiLorenzo?
Yes, the advertisement is out for PLDRB and code board members as well.
Okay, when was that sent? Were we looking for two members?
Last week, Kate had advertised them and also sent out. We've been receiving multiple applications as well. I can forward one to you, Bob, if you know of anyone that's interested.
That's okay. I heard we were looking, but I heard through the community, not from the city, which sort of surprised me. So, if I find anybody, I'm sure I can get them an application if they want to apply.
Generally, when a seat is going to expire, the city clerk's office will put out advertisements in the local newspaper, contact former people that already have applications on file, contact our former citizen academy people to put in applications and all that as well.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's other than to thank staff for the budget presentation, which is, again, I'm glad to hear John thinks we're getting better at it because it's a real slog, but I think everybody this morning did a good job of explaining it in terms that even I can understand, or at least think I do. Thank you. That's my comments.
Thank you. I have one comment, and Matt, it's really a question for you. If someone can explain to me what the relationship and arrangement is with the owner of the Matanzas Woods Golf Course as far as maintaining the property and mowing the grass.
Yes, I will actually ask Jason on behalf of Code to explain that.
Good morning, Mayor. The owner has an agreement with Code to mow the rights of way. Now, this is over and above what a regular landowner would have to do for an undeveloped piece of property. But this was developed some time ago. It's different from the previous owner because the previous owner still had some golf operations or some operations. It hadn't been returned back to raw land at that point in time. But then with this current owner, they removed the clubhouse building. There is no longer operation. It's raw land, and it's being treated primarily as raw land, except that this owner has shown a willingness to mow the rights of way on their own instead of city staff doing it.
So it's viewed as a vacant lot?
Correct.
And the same standards apply for a vacant lot in Palm Coast as they would for this property?
Correct.
So if we received emails, which, you know, some were copied on this, I think council was copied, as well as city manager, about a rat infestation, how does that get viewed by the city?
I did not receive an email about that. I'm not sure. I don't know the answer to that, Mayor.
But I just get it from you. I'm sorry. I just forwarded that to you last night, Jason. I just got that.
Oh, okay.
It's okay. No, it was one of the things I was going to touch base with you today and ask Code to look into that. I don't know what qualifies as an infestation. There was no, you know, numbers given. Someone said they saw a rat. I'm not sure what, you know, I think it's an issue that we need to get our heads around this morning and understand how we're not going to dismiss the question whatsoever. We need to properly figure out how we can address that question to the resident.
And, you know, I know we've done presentations out to the community group historically in this part of our city just to explain the whole golf course. Obviously, we're not addressing the development aspect. That's not come before council. That is quasi-judicial in nature. But as far as the maintenance goes, there seems to be some information that's circulating around that the city has made some sort of agreement with the developer that's contrary to every other relationship we have. So I think that needs to be directly communicated, not with those that are just certainly pushing forth these emails. However, there's a way for us to directly communicate with those residents through the geofencing, taking the city recurring utility payment, email addresses, merging those with a file around the neighborhoods and allowing direct communications to occur. So I think it would be appropriate in order for us to, you know, have that information readily available. And if the residents do have any questions, we have their contact information. And council, I think this is an important issue because it's one that continually comes up. I didn't have a true understanding of what the relationship looks like, so Does council object or have any other additional information as far as putting forth direct communication to the residents?
No, I support that. I think that's a great idea because I think we've all been, with the exception of perhaps Mr. Netz, that we've all been bombarded with questions regarding the relationship between the owner and the Matanzas Wood Golf Course maintenance. So thank you.
Bob, there's a consensus as well.
No, I think that's appropriate. I did get that email, and I was going to contact code enforcement, but I would like to have a better understanding of any special arrangements regarding that property, since it is maintenance of that property, since it is, you know, on the minds of the people in that area and in other places in the city.
And I believe maybe that's part of your district as well, Councilmember Netz. So I know you're familiar somewhat with the history of this issue. However, Matt, if you want to update Councilmember Netz on this issue so he can directly communicate with his constituents as well.
I think the issue for the public is the misunderstanding. That's not a golf course. As was pointed out, it is essentially raw land, and you can't apply standards to that. My understanding is you can't apply standards to that if you don't apply to any other undeveloped land. So, although we like to keep calling it a golf course, it is not. So, I think communicating with the residents who have issues, helping them to understand, doesn't mean they're going to like the answer, but there is a reason for nature of the relationship.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council.
Thank you. That is all I have. We will move to discussion by City Attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Hello, Council members. I was asked by Bill, and I believe this was a request that came in at a previous meeting, to talk about the different options for quasi-judicial proceedings in this virtual age that we find ourselves in now. So I'm just going to go over some of the options that I've seen in working with different cities and counties. I also serve as a land use hearing officer for Polk County, so and have heard quasi-judicial public meetings in kind of during COVID. So I'm going to touch on some of those and just go over briefly the process and what we need to make sure happens if you do decide to move forward with this. First of all, I'll say that the current current EO that was issued by the governor for virtual meetings is set to expire on September 1st. It's unknown whether it'll be extended again. We have heard there was some issues with the first extension due to the mandate that schools open versus having, you know, face-to-face for schools and not having it being physical quorums for local governments. So the question of whether or not the September 1st deadline is hard is we don't know at this point. And typically in past extensions, the governor has waited up until the day before sometimes to extend the emergency order. So with that being said, here's just a rundown of how some other jurisdictions have handled it. And I'll also just briefly go over, before I do that, the key components to quasi-judicial proceedings. So these are, you know, zoning proceedings that are coming in when somebody's asking for a rezoning. You know, any time where we're here acting as a quasi-judicial board. And those are, there's basically three. The ability for the elected officials to speak and see and hear each other, the ability for the public to listen or view the meeting where the item is being heard, and the ability for the public to speak and provide comments. So those are the things that we have to keep in mind when going through these to make sure that all those are being done in these proceedings. The other thing that we have to remember is we still have to try and comply, we still have to comply with ADA requirements. And I'll get into that a little bit for in just after I go through some of the options. So the first option, obviously, is a traditional in-person quasi-judicial proceeding. But that is modified in the sense that we would have to implement some COVID safety measures, you know, adequate spacing of chairs, providing for an overflow room if we anticipate a particular item is going to have a large showing of attendees. Setting, what I've seen happen is setting time certains for when these items will be heard. So for example, if you have a big item that you know is coming up, you wouldn't just say, okay, this is going to be on the 5 o'clock agenda. You'd set this item for a 6:30 time certain or whenever you believe to try to mitigate some of the number of people that are involved and are here. And some other things that have been floated out there, although I haven't seen this personally done, is choosing an alternate location that has a larger capacity to hear these, a larger matter. I haven't seen that done, but if that is an, you know, like, for example, a high school auditorium, a large church, something along those lines. The only thing that you have to make sure in those cases is obviously that it has to be in a place where there's no, you know, discrimination or anything like that. You can't exclude anyone. It'd have to be obviously open to the public. That's the whole point. So with the traditional in-person, there's some ways, as I discussed, to kind of mitigate and follow the CDC regulations or guidelines as they exist in that moment, which we know they've changed over time. The second option is to do an all virtual option, and that would be where you would need to be able to provide the opportunity to for anyone to speak and provide comment. Some jurisdictions that have done all virtual meetings, for example, Seminole County, they've done quasi-judicial meetings that are all virtual, and they've implemented things such as on their website, if you want to speak at the meeting, they have a method for you to be able to sign in and say, okay, I'm going to speak on this item. They've also set time certains. They've provided everybody with a, you know, depending on what platform you're using, a Zoom meeting, a Microsoft Teams meeting, whatever platform you're using to be able to have video conferencing. And the other thing that has been suggested is really, if you're going to do an all virtual meeting, you're really working with the applicant and the applicant's consultants to maybe pre-tape some of the presentation. They obviously have to be there for cross-examination purposes and to answer questions, but really working with them to try to determine the flow of the presentation and who will be present versus, I mean, who will be, how they will appear virtually. Another aspect of that is accepting email comments, you know, and reading those into the record. And there's some other items with an all virtual platform that would also need to be addressed as far as swearing in people and dealing with cross-examination if that's going to happen. The final option is the hybrid option, and this is basically anything. It's a hybrid between maybe you have a physical quorum present that you're required to have. You know, this would be if the EO isn't extended, and you have a virtual platform of staff or the applicant that can call in, and public attendees can come with appropriate COVID measures, or they can call in. It's really gives public participants the choice, and even applicants if it's necessary, and council members too, the choice to either attend physically or virtually. And those can be set up in a number of ways. I think the overriding point of all these different options is to provide good communication to the public and the city making the effort to make sure everybody has the opportunity to speak and be heard. And that may look differently, but it needs to be included in all the notices, all the agenda items, in any other, through your PIO, any other communication with the public on multiple platforms. So, those are the options. We're happy to help assist. I'll just note a couple things. Obviously, this is all new to everyone. Everyone's just doing the best they can as far as trying to manipulate virtual meetings to meet those traditional quasi-judicial procedural requirements. And I think all city and county attorneys have been working together to try to find some best practices that we can implement that can be done through an emergency ordinance of the city that outlines the process that you're going to use. If it's different from the traditional process that you have been using. And that's essentially my presentation on those. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have or help provide any guidance that I can as to next steps, because I know the city has some projects that may be coming up soon that may require additional, that may generate more public participation than, the standard quasi-judicial proceeding.
Yeah, so we've got a backlog currently of 16 projects. There's been a hold effectively on quasi-judicial since March of this year, March, April. So we're heading into, six, September will be 7 months. And we're trying to find some strategies that we're going to bring forward to council that respect the council, respect the integrity of the process, but most importantly, respect the citizens, our community. But we'll start allowing business to continue like many other communities are doing, some type of hybrid model that will afford people, the best discretion, their own discretion to come with the COVID enacted measures or to participate virtually. It's a difficult problem to solve for a lot of reasons, but it's time that we have to, try to move this forward and restore that functionality of business to the city. Jason, did you have any input? Oh, I'm sorry.
If we have a problem, we have to solve it. That's why we're here. We got to make decisions. And based on what our lawyer just mentioned, we have to look what's, I'm not going to say play by ear, but whatever the rules are, the rules are. Let's wait for what the governor is going to say. But we have to do what we have to do. We cannot stop. COVID will not stop us. Okay? We got to do what we have to do. We have citizens to respond to, and that's what we're here for. That's why they put us here.
So you're going to be working with legal?
We're working with legal. We're going to be working with staff. We're going to bring forward some ideas, definitely bring forward an ordinance or some mechanism, again, that will let everyone know exactly what the process is and how it's applied fairly to everybody and similar to everybody, and begin to move that forward here, I think, in the short term so we can restore that, one of those last pieces. Again, Captain Scone will keep mentioning, we're delivering about 97% of our services. A vast majority of our services are being delivered online through our virtual town hall, through Palm Coast Connect, through our case management system. This is one of those services that we need to figure out how to restore.
And it's, I guess my only question as far as the legal aspect, we have a mass ordinance mandate in our city that we've, a resolution, frankly, that we've adopted by council. And we have a requirement if you come into City Hall, you must wear a mask at all times. So that would apply. Correct.
Yeah, I mean, you could do, it would apply,
okay.
But you could also write it into, like Matt said, and as I mentioned, you would do an emergency ordinance that would set out the procedure. So, for example, if you did choose to do a traditional or a hybrid procedure, you could mandate that when you're attending the meeting, you have to be masked if you're here at City Hall.
Okay.
I would suggest bifurcating it. For obvious reasons that, maybe the mask mandate generally, but we're in a confined space here, there's differing reasons why you would maybe want to bifurcate it.
What do you mean?
Have it in both places. Rather just depend on the overall mask mandate, not just depend on the overall mask mandate, but also put it into your procedures.
That makes sense. Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Cuff?
Councilmember Cuff.
Yes, I mean, I'm glad we're looking at this, and I know this is going to be considered, but the two things that occur to me are we don't want to exclude any citizens who would otherwise want to attend one of these meetings because of their fear of COVID, which suggests to me we do have to be able to provide a virtual component. And then there is the problem, the legal problem, but I'm sure our city attorney and staff can handle that, of how someone who is on a video feed like I am now can be put under oath so that their testimony can be considered. But the other side of that is, you know, we have, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but not everyone is comfortable doing this. And not everyone has the capability of doing it. Attending one of these hearings on your cell phone is a lot different than being able to sit in front of a fully functional desktop like I'm doing right now. And I think we need to take that into consideration. I don't know whether that means the city might have to provide some kind of facilities that aren't in the meeting room but still accessible to the public, you know, to provide them if they don't have their own computer or tablet or something they're comfortable using to attend one of these virtually. So it's not as simple as saying y'all come or everybody just call in. I mean, the procedural aspects of this are complicated, and we need to keep both access to the meeting and safety of the public in mind when we set this up. So that's my comments for the day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jason DiLorenzo.
Jason.
Mayor, and thank you for that, Councilman Cuff. I think one of our concerns with hosting a hybrid, and this is what we're trying to work through, is you know, we're still limited to 50 gatherings of 50. And what happens when that 51st person
shows up here at
City Hall and we can't accommodate them, and then they have to return home, or the potential for them to miss the meeting? I think that is one thing we're very concerned about and not sure at this point how to deal with. A full CMT meeting would not cause that, but it would then cause some of the other issues, Councilman Cuff, that you just brought up.
Jason, let's just wait and have staff please work with legal and then come back with options, please.
Sure.
Thank you. Councilmember Cuff.
No, that's fine. I think what you're suggesting, Madam Mayor, is a good idea. I mean, we're not going to solve this during the city attorney's comment section today. It needs a lot of careful thought, and I'm looking forward to see what staff comes up with so then we can micromanage it for them. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you.
And thank you for all the options. I think all of us have taken notes, so whatever staff and you work through with options, I think will be helpful for us. And we can also agenda item it so we can actually have public participation, which would be helpful and appropriate. So, okay, thank you again. Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
Real briefly, just three things, and I think they're of interest to the council. One, on the 24th of this month, we have our debt refinancing meeting with our financial management consultants on an issue. A question has been raised. So I look forward to coming back with some great, good information on what opportunities that may exist in a lower interest rate world. The downside to the lower interest rate world is we also met last week with PFM Investments, our financial consultant. In relative terms, we are doing good. With a quarterly return of about 1.12%. In absolute terms, or got those reversed, we're not looking good to our best benchmark of about 4.25%. The long-term projection for interest rates is going to be zero or near zero.
that impact we're going to see, and I'll keep reminding everyone, really in the fiscal year 22 budget. So the budget that we have for this year, we feel very confident in those projections. Lastly, just a reminder, because it's been tremendously well received, once again, tomorrow will be the third back of the band back together with the virtual town hall meeting, broadcast live on WNZF at noon, also broadcast through our YouTube channel and our communications platform. There's still time to submit questions, and our team will answer those, and we look forward to meeting with our community tomorrow during virtual town hall. That's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll make a motion to adjourn this meeting.